Hello, friend. Welcome to the Watery Desho podcast. We are so happy to have the pleasure of your company. If this is your first time listening, sit back, relax. We hope you enjoy. If you are coming back because you enjoy our content and you'd like to support us, you can go to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/WateryDesho. We've got all kinds of fun rewards and bonus content like early access, Discord roles, additional audio and video content, all in three budget-friendly tiers. If you're not able to support us financially, no biggie. We totally understand. If you'd like to help us out for free, you can always give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, which helps our discoverability. You can follow us on SoundCloud, on Twitter, at WateryDesho. You can always send us an email at WateryDesho@gmail.com if you want to correspond with us. We may not get to read every correspondence on the show, but I can promise you that we do read and try to respond to every single one, because we do love our community, which we hope you'll be a part of. Thank you for your kind attention, friend, and without further ado, let's get to the show.
Good evening, ladies, gentlemen, and MBs. Welcome to Worry Desho's Stream of Thought. I have internet.
Yay.
I actually somehow, through, like, I don't know what blood magic I had to pull off to make this happen, but I actually managed to transition from one internet provider to another, despite all the massive chaos that, like, led up to it. So I'm actually here, unfortunately for you all. And as always, of course, I'm the Brit with, you know, some kind of wit, Shaden. You know, I've just made that out of nowhere, so you can now, that's my catchphrase going forward. And joining me from across the pond, but close to my heart, is, as always, my very good colleague, the Soul Doctor.
Witty line here. Insert one, please.
Google really hard for it. Find one, you know.
Hello, Sophie. Vinland hype indeed. We are hype for lucky number 13 Vinland episode. There's not really a good way to, like, you know, we had Vin 10 and Vin 11 saga, you know, but you can't really, 13 is a tough one. I can't really think of a good, like, way to, like, just mash a portmanteau out of those two. You know?
Sadly not, no. But anyway, yes, we're back. We're going to be talking now about... this is technically season two, I suppose, if you want to call it that, although really it's the same full 26-episode core, or 25.
Now. Let's use the proper anime fandom, you know, verbiage. It's...
Is this going where I think it's going?
Core.
Yeah. All right.
Core two. Not season two. It's core number two.
Have you had your pills, say, Doc? You'd be, you know, to handle your pedantry, because you'd be very pedantic there. Take your medicine, man.
No, look, I advocate the whole seasons thing. I don't know why we do cores. Maybe to differentiate between shows that take a break and come back.
Do I look like I'm wearing a beret? Do I look like a snob? Like, you know, that's why I don't say cores. I just tell it as it is, you know.
Do you really want me to answer that?
Oh, go on. Go on.
No, it was just a joke. You definitely don't. You don't look like a film snob or any other kind of snob. You're a fighting game snob, but I don't think you're any other snob.
I'm working on being a beer snob.
Yeah, okay. Okay, that's fair. I think you've
achieved... Although that's not really the face that shows that off more than anything, but, well.
No, you've achieved the beer snob status. I think you're good there.
Mm-hmm.
What, damn, are you right. Drinking anything, or is it
not tonight? I'm drinking the most non-alcoholic, non-anything of beverages, Diet Coke.
Yeah, I've got Diet Dr. Pepper here. This podcast not sponsored by any diet soda, unfortunately.
Diet Dr. Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
That's criminal.
You don't like it?
Like what?
Wait a minute.
Dr. Pepper's got a distinctive taste, but you drink it with the sugary version. You don't drink Diet Dr. Pepper.
Listen.
Have you ever tried it?
No, okay.
I have, and it's shit.
It is definitely not shit. In fact, it is so not shit that it is the only diet soda that tastes anything like its non-diet counterpart. The rest of them, Diet Coke tastes nothing like Coca-Cola Classic. Diet Pepsi, it's a different drink than Pepsi. Like,
I would rather drink Mephistopheles armpit sweat than drink that crap.
Oh my god. Listen, I haven't had a sugary soda in a long ass time. I think it's been years at this point. And so I guess maybe I've become, it's sort of a Stockholm Syndrome-y type thing where I've just become used to it. It tastes like what I remember regular Dr. Pepper tasting like, maybe, is the deal.
Well, I mean, you are, by your own title, a subtle doctor, but I've got a diagnosis for you here. You've got a serious case of just being plain fucking wrong.
How dare you?
And there is medication for that. It's called the full sugar version. Take twice a day. Anyway, we're not here, of course, to rate soda or judge the merits.
We should, though. We should talk about, like, soda ratings. This is a prime Patreon content waiting to happen. Because there are better versions of Diet Coke, for instance, than the plain, ordinary one.
Yeah. There's the title. And that's as far as I'm taking that concept, believe me. I mean, I'm not even talking about beer there, you know. I can at least engage in being a beer sub. But no, we're of course here to talk about Vinland Saga, episode 13, Child of a Hero. And you might think to yourself, I wonder who that refers to. Is it our, you know, lead protagonist, Forfin? And, well, a bit ambiguous in this episode, as it turns out. There's a lot to talk about. Things are picking up again.
Well, I mean, it is, like, there are many children of heroes in the show, but the episode is referring to one in particular.
Yes, indeed. But yeah, we'll be coming to that in a bit. And actually, just to get ahead of things here, like, the show is actually picking back up again a little bit, which I really appreciate. Like, obviously I groused a bit last time about, the pacing, and the pacing issues haven't still quite resolved themselves. But I've started seeing things a bit in a new light, which I'll get to when we get to our talking points. So I'm on the up again.
You got us two thumbs down on YouTube. Two whole thumbs down.
It's fine. It's fine.
No, of course, it's definitely
that's
fine.
That's not the worst I've been roasted.
I also played a part in that, coming over to your side.
Were you one of those thumbs?
I was not one of the thumbs, but I was one of the... I came over to your point of view that episode 12 was a wheel-spinning exercise.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Was that your pizza delivery? Did you get pizza and you didn't get any for me? What a bastard!
That is what happened. Yes.
Oh, I'm wounded. Really, I am. I'm more wounded than poor Askeladd's horse. I mean, how bad can you feel for one animal? Like, you know, I mean, I'll get to it in the plot summary, but I just want to say now I find it hilarious that our new character, whose name I'm not going to reveal yet because it's prime joke material later, that he says you're all barbarians, and the shot's just looking at like Askeladd's dead horse and like. Pot Kettle Black, man! Pot Kettle Black! Come on! Anyway, so before we get into that, of course, we're going to talk about the polls from previous, or rather the poll, and then we'll get into some stuff about the creator of this particular episode, I believe. Is that right, Doc?
That is correct, although both those sections will be quite short.
That's fine. Let's get them underway then, so we can get to talking about the prime roast beef that is this episode.
Yes. Let's get the side salad over and done with here. Okay, so poll for last week, Vinland Saga episode 12. Poll number one, the one and only. How did you feel about the first time that Canute spoke? 71% of our audience said it was great, which is kind of not how I thought that would go. The remaining two choices both had 14%. It was fun, and what a letdown. Combined, they would only sort of, you know, give a 28% So this is a pretty, this is a landslide vote here, and
yeah. I think every poll I put up this point where I express an opinion of my own, like everyone goes against. I am just wrong on every count. And you know what? I will die on that hill repeatedly, over and over again. Believe me.
Polls are science. It's hard to argue with science,
especially on Twitter. You know, the most scientific of places. But I want to elaborate on why I put that poll out there, because, funnily enough, again, like it's as we do like this kind of sequential look week on week at a show, understandings change as we look back on, you know, characters and new revelations, and you know, things that we knew previously or thought previously are now different. We think differently about them. That's the nature of judging media week on week. So here's the thing, right? I took umbrage with that initially because I thought that that was Knut's like moment of introduction, as it were, the point at which they became a character, so to speak, rather than just being, you know, extra man, person in background, you know, the red shirt, whatever, Sir not appearing in this film, or Bob, or whatever his fucking name was. But the funny thing is, I was wrong, not about my opinion, well, it's just the opinion, of course, but about my feeling at the time, but rather I was wrong in thinking that was the episode in which we were actually properly introduced to Knut. That's not true. It's this episode, and there's certainly plenty to talk about. So we'll come to that in a bit, but yeah, times can change one's opinion, or at least give new perspective, and we've now got certainly more to work with than we had previously for a lot of the characters, which I really appreciate. But we'll, of course, come to that in a bit. Doc, take it away with who actually is responsible for episode 13. Who got the unlucky number?
Okay,
Who got the short straw?
The director of this episode is Yosuke Yamamoto. Again, a name that we have talked about twice already, because Yamamoto-san directed episode 3, Tororu, and then episode 6, Tabi no Hajimari, The Journey Begins. And so now he's at the helm for Eiyu no Ko, The Hero's Child. And we've already talked about the CV and that it's not really much of anything to write home about. This is definitely his first like thing of note. I think it might be his first time being an episode director. But he worked on such forgettable shows as Asura Cryon. And the only reason...
Wait, what was that called?
Asura Cryon.
I thought you said Asif Crying or something.
Cryon, by the way, with no G. It is literally crying. I mean, not
if, crying. If you've got a case of Asif Crying, like, you really need to go see a doctor. I just want to throw that out there. Like, I'm so sorry if you've been afflicted with that condition. But, like, get help. Please. And don't make an anime about it either.
Truly.
Well, that's not the last time we would talk about ass in this episode.
Oh!
I love this show for just giving me free material. Like, you know, anyone could be a comedian when you chat shit about Vinland Saga. It's great.
It's so true. Like, so Asura Cryon, the things I remember about it, like, I never watched it because it looked like not a thing I would be into. But, like, back when Crunchyroll first became a thing, like, it had... I had recently discovered it in like 2009, and they had very, very recently gone from being, you know, a site that was all about hosting like fan subs and sort of less than legal stuff to like a legal by the book outfit. And one of the very few things I can recall from their much smaller catalog back then was Asura Cryon. So. This is where I remember it from.
You gotta start somewhere, I guess. You know,
it's true.
If you're gonna go legit, you've gotta sell your anime that sounds like, you know, a venereal disease of the rectum. But hey, there we go. Oh dear. Does that technically make me racist by commenting on, like, you know, how I don't understand the Japanese name there? I'm so sorry if it does. I'll try not to make any more butt jokes in this episode. That's gonna be very difficult.
I don't know. I think the joke was about my voice. And not about, you know, Asura.
Oh, well. Okay, so let's get started talking about Child of a Hero.
Let's do it.
And we open with, well, visual similarities, you know, there. This is very much clearly, you know, Fourth in Alta from Fate Grand Order, you know, carrying a woman onto the shore. No, obviously it's not Fourth in Alta, I'm joking. This, I'm going to reveal now, just so you can have it in mind for later, is actually Askeladd at a young age, carrying a woman ashore. And the person he's meeting there is Gracianus, again, also younger as well, although, you know, when you look like that, I get the impression Gracianus has always looked like, you know, a lump of, like, petrified wood throughout much of his life.
He's one of those guys that probably from, like, age, like, 17 to age, like, 42 looked exactly
he's
the
like,
same.
He's like Dee Norris from Breaking Bad, who played, you know... God, what was his name? He played Hank. Like, yeah, if you've seen him in Starship Troopers and you've seen him in Breaking Bad, he looks like he's not aged a single day. Or Joseph Kukin, who played Kane in Command & Conquer, ironically, you know, an immortal, timeless figure, who similarly also didn't age a fucking day. Really impressive. Anyway, so yeah, that's our opening scene there, where he's trying to bring his mother back to Beria because she's dying. We will, of course, get more context slice later. And then we get a new OP. And since we have a new OP, we've got to talk about it just the one time. I'm going to put it out there. I think this new OP looks great, and it's also very clearly hinting at certain character arcs that are going to come across later, particularly with Canute. But I did not care one jot for the song. Not that I didn't like it, it was just kind of...
It's super boilerplate, yeah.
Yeah,
especially compared to the last one.
Yeah, Mukanjo, or however you pronounce that, like, that actually fit the idea of the, you know... of the show. And, like, the closing screamy lyrics where Thorfinn's, like, you know, on that battlefield and he's the last one alive, like, it almost felt like it was symbolic of his rage or what was going on. Like, it had some sort of thematic resonance. Whereas this just sounds like, you know, well, whoever came up with the OP just decided he'd pick it based on what was on karaoke that night. You know, oh, I'm not singing this, but I'm going to make it into the song for our next OP. Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Get me some more drinks. Oh, dear.
Yeah, I can't argue. I mean, I can't. I would like to make a case for the new OP, but well, the new OP song. I mean, you mentioned like the visuals were good, and they were pretty slick. But
I have to say. By the way,
go ahead.
Sorry.
Nope. You first.
I have to say, by one nice little detail I like is, of course, we see all the red. Dad's army trails, because I can't not make that joke, you know, crossing over the maps. But the arrow turns green as it approaches Vinland, which again is going to be your hint as to what's going on with Thorfinn later when he transitions from being a warrior to being someone who's more into exploring, which I really, really like as a small little touch. Like I say, the visuals of the new OP are great. I just wish they'd picked, well, anything. Put Johnny Cash's hurt over this. Pay his estate for some money. I would totally listen to, you know, the Finland OP2 with a hurt played over it.
Would you? Is it a, like, you know, someone playing the triangle you would take over the just bland porridge that we
Cash!
Got?
It's Johnny fucking Cash.
No, yeah, listen. Well, that's a big. I mean, I think most people would rather listen to Johnny Cash's hurt than. Probably 75% of
I'll take Nine Inch Nails
songs.
Version of it. There we go.
Sure, of course. That's a great version of that song.
As opposed to whatever this was.
Well, I'm going to make a poll about this, but I was going to ask you. So, for an OP, do you find... And I mean, this is a silly poll question designed to get you off the fence. So, don't take the cop-out answer of both. But if you had to pick, right... Which is more important to you about an OP, music or the visuals, art, you know, whatever? Like, if you had to pick which you sort of care about more, which makes you more invested or more likely to watch it? And there are more important to you could mean different things. Like, important to you could mean, like, it has to, like, tell me something about the show, or it just has to keep me engaged or be fun. Like, there's a lot of different ways you could parse it.
Well, having fought on this for all of approximately 10 seconds...
Yep, that's what I want.
Yep, I'm gonna throw the Molotov cocktail out there and really anger the Sakuga fans in the audience by saying it's the music that I want.
Me
I'll
too!
I'll tell you why, because I had a think on this, right? You could have a visually interesting, a really, really great OP that tells you a lot about the characters, like this one does. Because it does, you know, we've got a lot of things going on here with various characters we know, like, and we've got hints of things to come. But if your music is uninteresting and dull, it just completely saps all the energy out of it. And bear in mind, you're going to be seeing this week on week on week on week. So once you've passed the details first time around from an OP, unless they do something like in Given's case, where they added Yuki's face in at a certain point, or other OPs where they make small changes or little things like that, you really need to have a memorable song to get you in hype for the show, I think, every time, week on week. Not to say you won't be hyped for it necessarily anyway, but I do think that that is probably the key thing here, because it's the repetition that you're going to have to handle the most. And nothing will bore an audience more, in my opinion, getting into a show, or make them want to, you know, click the skip intro button on Netflix, than having a boring song.
Yeah, I mean, it seems paradoxical, actually, I think is the right word. It seems paradoxical because you're watching the thing. But yeah, for that 90 seconds, like, I want the music to grab me. I mean, at least the way that I consume it, and this is probably speaks ill of my attention span, like you were saying, of the Netflix viewer. Like, if the OP is, the song is bland, like, after I've kind of seen the video once, mm-hmm. I'll just, like, check my phone or, you know, get on Twitter or whatever for a couple minutes. But, like, if the song is good, I don't know, I'm just there. I'm there. Like,
I mean, let's go back through the shows we've covered on Stream of Thought recently this year. So let's start with our previous one, Sarah Zamai.
Mm-hmm.
That opening was fantastic. It was just full of energy and verve. Like, it really got you pumped for it.
Yeah.
Like, that was great. Promise Neverland, slow burn start up to it. But then it really, really kicks off, like, towards mm-hmm. the end. And it's got a sense of triumph at the end of it, which is, of course, emblematic of that show.
Mm-hmm.
Banana Fish. Yeah, both of Banana Fish OPs were great.
They were so good.
And Banana Fish also does something I think is quite noteworthy with its OPs, that, or at least is something that I think is good to do if you can do it, which is that the mood of the OPs change to fit the tone of the show, because I apologize, by the way, for spoiling last time, so I'll refrain from doing so again. But of course, really horrible shit happens in the first half of Banana Fish, no surprises there. And obviously the first one's like got this much more energetic, like, you know, like crime tempo to it, like mm-hmm. if you want to call it that kind of thing. The second one is more mournful, like it's got that kind of like, you know, I wish I was elsewhere kind of vibe to it.
You're right.
It's a great song, but it reflects the change in the mood and the tone and the events that have happened throughout the show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I were to bring this back to Vinland, Mukanjo at the, you know, the first half, Great set. What we need is a similar thing to Banana Fish's second OP, in my opinion, where it is more mournful, where it's like, you know, reflective of like just how wasteful all of this warfare is and the damage it's done to the various individuals, three of which we're going to cover in this very episode, one of which we, of course, covered a lot before, and two of which have now got new lights on them. That, to me, is what they should have gone with, something more slow, more moody, more atmospheric, as opposed to... Well, I'm just going to shuffle on my, you know, Spotify playlist. Let's go.
The Jack FM. Just, we caught this exactly. off the airways. Yeah.
I'm honestly surprised to hear banjo music playing over this. Because honestly, I think that would make it better, even though it's still bad.
It would be... Thank you. That's incredible that you just did that. It's really hard to top that last OP for... capturing Vinland, like, especially like the final seconds of it, I think were just like, I can't even describe how awesome, like, when the music kind of fades out and it's just the lead singer screaming and mm-hmm. you have Thorfinn alone on a rock screen like that.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, it fits,
it's so
the
powerful. Yeah, it's so good.
That's I mean, as you said, like, you know, one or the other. Being real here, you really want to have a good mixture of both, where they play off each other and like intertwine, mm-hmm. as they did in that case. Here, yeah, I guess, in fact, Sophie's right. Let's get some Kalmar on or something like that. Let's get some like Swedish black metal. I would totally be in for that.
Yeah.
All right. So, moving away from the OP, we catch up with our old friend, you know, King Sejan, doing his usual thing of sitting on the throne, you know. Chatting with Floki about like what's going on, and Heavy indeed is the head that wears the CG crown, because that's what it was. Oh man, I don't. Again, I think it's just to, you know, have his tune back in with the fact that he's still around. But that being said, Sewin's appearance is now going to be more meaningful now that we get to hear some of Canute's own backstory.
Mm-hmm.
which we will be discussing in great detail later, no doubt. But anyway, we now return to Vinland Saga, already in progress, and, you know, when the horse, you know, said, you know, was asked, hey, are you, do you want to die? He, of course, said nay, but no one listened to him, and he got shot three times in the head. Yeah, but things don't break out into a fight as previously thought. We get approached by who I think is Bruno Bucciarati's, like, you know, ancestor with that bull haircut.
It's like, it is so many times for no good reason. I mean, maybe it was a popular haircut. I don't know. And you do research and you see, oh, look at these, the drawings of these people. They have these haircuts. But like in a lot of video games and anime, they're set in, you know, the Middle Ages or adjacent. Someone is going to have that stupid haircut. It's so bad. The Prince Valiant.
He wasn't as well dressed as Bruno, though, to be fair. But he does have a very good JoJo's name, which is, of course, Asa.
Oh, it's incredible. It really is. I mean,
I have to ask, like, between him and, you know, Gratianus, like, who do you think was more the butt of the joke? I am a king of comedy. You look physically hurt by that.
Please shut this show down.
You're the one in charge. You could kill it any time you want. You could, you could, you could cut to technical difficulties whenever you like. Ah, dear. So anyway, Asa comes up and is like, you know, what are you doing here? Like, you know, we're not having any of this. Askeladd tells his men to stand down and not fight back because they're just trying to, like, you know, look tough. And Asa actually wants to capture Canute and use him as a shield. Like, because Canute's the whole reason all of them are here, pretty much. But this is the point in which Askeladd brings Canute forward to make a rallying, stirring speech for the men, you know, to prove that he's the big, like, you know, swinging dick around here. And, well, given what we've all seen of Canute thus far, he, of course, completely bottles it and just hides behind Ragnar. I have to say that I think throughout much of this episode, Canute has a facial expression that I don't think I've seen since I last saw an advert for constipation relief. He really, really looks like he's in deep, deep intestinal pain. Poor kid.
He is very tense.
He is super fucking tense. So he ends up hiding behind Ragnar when Askeladd tries to push him to do that. But Askeladd, rightly in my opinion, points out that, you know, like, you need to nut up, kid. You need to, you know, prove yourself. But this is the point where Ragnar chips in and says, you know nothing of the prince. What are you talking about? Who are you? In particular, has a line that I will come back to later as a talking point because I found this very interesting. You have no place to say, like, you know, how, like, to control him or say what he should and should not do, which I'm paraphrasing there. But yeah, keep that line in mind because I found that very, very important. Nonetheless, though, Ragnar now, I have to admit, like, this all happens, like, while everyone's watching, like, you know, on this battlefield thing, like, on the hills. oh, by the way, before I forget, lovely little bit of subtle irony in this episode here, and indeed with this whole scenario, because if you might recall, when Fors was killed, how did Askeladd do it? By ambushing him on over hills and cliffs with archers. Mm-hmm. And now he's getting the taste of his own medicine here. Whoops. Funny how that works out, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm. He seems much more prepared.
This is true.
Than Thor's unfortunate, like, boat of children and, you know, a couple of old people.
This is very true. But yeah, we get a bit of Canute's backstory here, which is that basically Canute has lived in a Game of Thrones episode his entire life. Like, most of his siblings have been murdered or hacked apart at various points. He himself has just had to stay very, like, you know, under the radar in order to just survive, to not be noticed. And that in of itself pretty much adequately, if not completely, explains his character. Like, if you've spent your entire life keeping your mouth shut and your head down for fear of, well, losing said head, no surprise here that he can't suddenly, in front of how many people, with their lives riding on his words, actually say anything. You know, yeah. It's not unreasonable for him to, you know, react that way.
Didn't you want to just tell the, like, the killer in the flashback, like, they're dead. You can stop. Stop chopping. Stop swinging the axe. They're dead.
He was just being really, really for it. Like, you know.
It's so dramatic.
He was Winston Wolfing it, you know. He wanted to clean up after himself. But anyway, so Askeladd's like, all right, fine. For fuck's sake, I'll sort this shit myself again. So he's got a plan in mind with Gratianus, and they're going to go and speak to Asser about it. A couple of things to note, by the way. Thorfinn takes one look at Canute and just, like, utterly, utterly dumps on him. I can't remember the exact words off the top of my head, but, like, you know, I think, like, calls him a coward, perhaps, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, like, it's like, really, I can't believe we're the same age.
You're such a loser. That
yes,
was it, yeah.
So the, yep.
You're such a loser.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, there's a really... I'm not going to...
Shut up!
Elaborate... exactly. No, you! I am rubber and you a glue.
Your mom.
Oh, don't say that to Thorfinn.
That would be bad.
Oh, God,
he would have
stabbed him. Mm-hmm. Like, one knife, one eye, like... Ah.
Not have gone well.
No. There's a shot here, by the way, that I want to point out, not as a full talking point, but just because I found it really, really interesting. Gratianus makes the very correct assumption about Ragnar's behavior towards her, that the chick must someday leave the nest,
mm-hmm.
Which we will cover later when we talk about Ragnar and how he has looked after Canute for good and for bad. But I really, really appreciate this little detail where you're looking over Gratianus' shoulder on the left-hand side of the frame and you can see Ragnar and Canute. But as that happens, as he's seeing this line, it pans right, and you'll note that Thorfinn is walking away as well. But as this pan happens, Askeladd enters the frame. You see the parallels here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You know, like, I think that, like, compared to Given on a whole, like, again, without elaborating on too much since we're still in plot summary, I don't think that, like, this show, like, Vinland Saga, has exhibited the same level of technical competence or visual fidelity that Given has with certain directional choices. And indeed, I've criticized certain, like, flubs they've made animation-wise where they've just basically inserted, like, you know, cardboard cutouts and backgrounds and whatnot. But that, I still think, was a really, really nice touch. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but nonetheless, you know, art is one of those things where you can always infer meaning if it wasn't necessarily intended. And I certainly got, I mean, well, the comparisons between Thorfinn and Canute will only get more acute as we go along, I suspect. But anyway. So after that, Asser, Gratianus, and Askeladd are all on top of this hill, discussing what the, you know, the plan is, what they're going to do. Like, what ultimately can Askeladd, who, bear in mind, is normally a pirate, and now he's acting as a diplomatic mouthpiece for the Prince of Denmark. Like, what you know, strange bedfellows, like, you know, mm-hmm. walk and make of people. What can he ultimately offer to Asser, who himself, like, you know, is the general or lord of a small Welsh kingdom? Good luck with that. Sue!
A barber. We will trade you a barber.
Yeah, that would probably be a good idea. Bjorn, by the way, is watching this, and I don't recall the name of Bjorn's, like, friend. He's been a recurring character.
He
I've
has.
Seen him a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just gonna, you know, call him, like, Bjorn's pal or whatever, you know. His bromance, whatever. No, his bromance is really more of Askeladd, but anyway. He's like, you know, what's going on here? This is daft. Isn't Askeladd a weird guy? And Bjorn, like, immediately leaps into his defense, like, you don't know shit, shut up. But Bjorn also reveals that I don't know actually very much about Askeladd at all. Apart from the fact that he's from Denmark, which, funnily enough, as we will learn imminently, is only a half-truth in itself, if even that.
Mm-hmm.
So even Bjorn, like, the one thing that he does know that doesn't involve mushrooms is technically wrong.
Yeah. See, it's funny, I think something slightly different away. I mean, maybe we took the same thing away, but that scene, it has sort of a funny moment in it, but, like, I thought that the point of it was to show that Bjorn, maybe his faith in Askeladd is not necessarily shaken, but if it was going to be in the future, this could be, like, the beginnings of that, like, the cracks in the foundation. where, you know, he's he doesn't trust me enough to tell me this, you know, like, and the other guy's like, I don't care, like, he pays me. And
yeah, well, I think the impression I got was that he was telling him to, like, you know, shut up or not be an idiot by making these comments, because he was jumping to Askeladd's defense. Like, I mean, they, you know, Askeladd's done them right so far, to be quite honest. Like, they've lived a fairly comfortable life, you know, pillaging, murdering, raping, and all those other wholesome activities that people like them get up to in those times. Hooray. Great. Anyway, so Askeladd, Asser, and Gracianus, you know, they're just sit up there shooting the shit. And this is where the big reveal happens. It turns out that
they're trading Pokemon. That's what they're doing on the hill.
That's the Pokestop on the hill, yeah. No,
they're like, all right,
we've
got to
get the raid.
Everyone back five times as far as you are now, because we need to make some secret deals. Okay, you need to give me some really powerful water types, because this guy in my tribe has a fire and he's kicking my ass.
Askeladd just brings up a big shiny chest, and of course Asa thinks it's full of gold, but it's really just full of shiny Charizards and cards. Like, grade 10, motherfucker!
And Gratianus is like, I have the Mewtwo. Let us barter.
Damn, son. Damn. But no, Askeladd secretly is not a member of the Elite Four. He is actually, as it turns out, half Welsh. And this is where his history is elaborated on. So, he mentioned previously that he was the son of Olaf, but also the son of Lydia. So, mum and dad. Who are Olaf and Lydia, you might wonder. He reveals that Olaf was a conquering Danish hero, if I recall correctly, who came and plundered Wales. And resultantly took Lydia, Askeladd puts it very diplomatically, as his concubine. I am probably going to suspect that it was nowhere near as consensual as that term, even as ill-fitting as that is, probably implies.
Yeah, we saw how she ended up. And doesn't he say, like, she, like, slept in the stables or something? Like, I mean, it just...
Something like that, yeah. So, yeah, basically, Askeladd is the, you know, he is the result of, well, ironically, the very thing that he himself perpetuates.
Mm.
But, well, we will get into that soon enough, because that's going to be another talking point I want to bring up. But, yeah, he is basically banking on his half-Welsh heritage, but also the fact that Olaf himself was a descendant of Artorius, who we mentioned previously. No, not, of course, the, you know... Not, of course, the female, you know, chick from Fate Grand Order.
Yeah, or the Dark Souls character.
Nope. Neither of those, I'm afraid. We're not crossing our canons too much.
Not one of Gwyn's men, no. This is, as you said, this is King Arthur. Like, the real person that supposedly the legends were based on was Artorius. Not of the Abyss, but of...
Camelot.
Wales. Oh, no, yeah, Camelot. Yeah, Britannia, like Roman Britannia or something like that. Yeah, Old Britannia. I don't know.
Yeah, but he was the leader of the Britannian army at the time for Rome. So he's banking on his history there, but also his Welsh heritage. So irony of ironies, like he's actually using both sides like to make an argument. Like, I know where my heart is and where my countrymen is, but look at how boss my dad and his dad before him and all the dads before them were. And he makes an offer to us, which goes like this. I basically have the prince down there. And I, you know, as you say yourself, like, you know, as us Danes, we violated non-aggression pacts 3 times before. So any future one we get written up between Wales and Denmark isn't worth the fucking paper it's written on. I get that. That's cool. But I know where my loyalty lies, and it sure as hell isn't with Denmark. It's with Wales. I hate the Danes. But I can mingle with them. Which ties in with the line he said earlier that, you know, even a wolf sometimes must wear, you know, sorry, a sheep must wear the skin of a wolf to graze.
Yeah.
And that's certainly what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So he makes that offer. And Asa's like initially like very impressed by this, like, whoo, Askeladd, like, what's heavier, your armor or your big brass balls? Well done, lad.
Yeah.
But he has a point to make, which is like, well, why should I believe you? And Askeladd says, because you should. There you go.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
The plan, which I didn't properly elaborate on, by the way, is that Askeladd is essentially going to, you know, lean on Canute to get that non-aggression pact signed, which will in turn give, you know, him and his men sanctuary and basically allow them to escape Forkel, who isn't in this episode, sadly, so half a point off for that, but, well, you know, we can't have too much Forkel, you know, too much of a good thing can turn you off.
Exactly, yeah, we gotta ration him out appropriately for the most efficient hives. And but yeah, Askeladd, well, he's like, you know what, I'll have myself a high position in the cabinet, so I can get this done for you, Mr. Bullcut.
And again, just to remind you all, like, Askeladd, all he previously did was just plunder villages for shits and giggles, and now he's running this, like, you know, chess master shit. Like, what does he think he is? Fucking Littlefinger. Come on, man.
Yeah. Right.
But he's doing it. I mean, yeah. If nothing else, Askeladd has proved himself a quite cunning man. So the plan goes thusly, that all of Askeladd's men will disarm themselves, which seems almost suicidal, but again, his men trust him and are willing to
can
do
I ask
that.
You, can then, I ask you a question? Oh,
yes.
Oh, just as before we leave too much, so why is he doing this?
Do you mean disarming or just in
general?
Oh
no, I'm sorry. Why is Askeladd doing this?
Well, do you want to save that for a talking point? Important. Or do you want to go into
Oh no, I just thought like we can go into it later if you want to. I just thought it was worth mentioning even now that like. Because it's weird, like, it without, like, the reason. Like, why? What? Why does he care about whales? But it's because, like, he loves whales. Like, you know, and he's like, I won't allow them to, like, touch one blade of grass in this country. And just like, wow, this passion for Askeladd. It's nuts.
But even then, you might ask yourself, is he necessarily genuine or is he just
That's a great
saves
point.
I mean, you know. It's a very convincing, you know, lie if it is one nonetheless, but at the same time, like, you know, if it's what keeps him alive and gets him to safety, given that, you know, you've got battleship playing extraordinaire Forkel right behind them.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize, Master Kessel. Thank you for clarifying on that. No, it was actually Lydia who had the blood of Artorias.
Okay. Yeah. Because it would be...
This is what... I really should have gone on Ancestry.com and double-checked that. I'm still
exactly.
Just make sure I get it right. But no, thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's the jig. And he's going to, you know, disarm his men and just they will be taken as prisoners, quote unquote, which will give them, you know, asylum, sanctuary, or whatever you want to call it. So this leads to Ragnar getting very indignant because he says, like, no, fuck you. I don't do what you tell me, you know. I'm not disarming. Nor is Thorfinn, for that matter. Thorfinn's having none of it. This, you know, leads to them eventually, you know, keeping their weapons. Askeladd capitulates, but also reveals the nature of Askeladd and Thorfinn's relationship to Ragnar. He's like, listen, Coned, and clearly, you know, I didn't realize Thorfinn had also seen Alien Nation. I thought I was the only one who was going to make that joke, but there we go. I'm glad everyone recognizes Ragnar for the alien that he is.
It must be a very conically shaped head for him to not have the pop culture reference and also still refer to him as Conehead.
Must be a real bitch finding a tailored hat for him. I know.
That's why he never wears a hat.
Do you reckon at Christmas, like when he was much younger, Canute put like those tiny little stars on the top of Christmas trees on his head?
I hope so. I hope
or maybe a little angel.
I hope that they do. Like, yeah. So, did they talk about Christmas in the show already?
No. Well, he's a Christian, though. To be fair,
do they call it Yule or something like that? I don't know.
I think they have done. Yes, I think it might have been. Ilya, who mentioned it way back when.
Yeah.
I wonder how she's doing. I'm sure we'll probably never see her again. Anyway. Oh, you're sad, aren't you, about that? You went to see Beskirl again, didn't you?
I miss her.
You need to go... Just go read some fanfic, man. I'm sure there's plenty out there.
Just go read the manga.
Yeah, you could do that as well, actually, to be fair. That reveals the nature of their relationship at this point. But at that point, they then, of course, set off again.
Mm-hmm.
And Canute, at this point, starts, like, you know, like he's, like, you know, something, like he's a character out of Revenge of the Nerds. Like, and so Thorfinn, like, with the best fucking really.
It's so really, good. It's really good.
Yeah. Like, he's got the best, I could not give less of a fuck what you have to say, Princey. You know, you could literally be telling me right now where to find a pot of gold at the end of a rainbow, and I could not give less of a shit. It's such a great expression for Thorfinn, I'll give him that much. But, like, Thorfinn basically, you know, calls him out on all this. Like, you know, like, spit it out, you know. Say what you want to say. And if I recall correctly, Canute says, I'm a coward. Which he actually then corrects and says, no, I'm actually cautious.
Yeah, I think he says that he's not. He's just very, very, very cautious because his words have all this weight. And he answers to his dad, and he doesn't want to, like, make him feel too good or make him feel too bad. So he just is quiet. And it's not because he's afraid, goddammit.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
He does say I'm a coward, actually. Oh, okay. The subtext. And I wanted to make note that specifically, because again, that'll be something I want to talk about later.
Yeah, for sure.
This, by the way, is following the point in which some of the Welsh locals are actually watching the caravan go down the road, and there seems to be, like, a possible threat of violence outbreaking, because they, like, hate the Danes and want to start throwing stones at them. And Canute, of course, being anxious as he is, and obviously dressed like someone of importance, he's not like how Thorfinn is dressed, for example, who could be anybody. Like, he sticks out like a sore thumb.
Right.
He's very nervous. So Thorfinn, of course, calls him out on his nervousness, and that's when Canute leads in by saying, you know, that I'm a coward, but no, I'm actually cautious. I know that my words carry a lot of weight. I can't promise this non-aggression treaty will be said, etc., etc. Thorfinn continues to, like, basically rip him into him. And this leads to an outburst from Canute where he's basically leaning over and points at him, and Thorfinn, of course, like, you know, but wouldn't fucking melt. He could not care less. But what's really interesting, of course, is Canute saying, like, no one has ever spoken to me like this before. I will not tolerate this shit from you. Which is very, very important, and I think is a starting point for what is going to be his character arc here. Bearing in mind everything else we've said before about how he's been treated and possibly even coddled by Ragnar, for example.
It's all very intriguing.
So he's having none of that. But then eventually, of course, we get to the ending montage, which does indeed look like he's signing the treaty.
Yeah.
Followed by the first snows of winter coming in.
Yuki.
Oh, no, not again. It's all happening again.
No.
Leading also to the group diverting along to a new path. A fork in the road, if you will. Mm-hmm.
It's a symbolism. Askeladd is changing course in the midway point of the journey. People are grumbling. Symbolism.
Nah, he just finally decided to use Google Maps so he didn't get lost.
Just flipped boop, a boop, coin. Boop, boop, that's boop, it.
And that otherwise
there's
is
a slowdown ahead. Please take the next right.
There is a band of rampaging Vikings in your area. Please avoid. It's like speed camera warning.
There's a four-carriage pileup causing a 40-minute delay.
So, that otherwise is the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a lot to talk about here, mm-hmm. actually, but I want to actually start by just pointing something out that I find really interesting. So I want to ask you, and indeed the people in the audience here, an open question. It might seem like an obvious one, but just roll me on this. How do you develop a character in a story? Like what do you do? What do you show to the audience? I know this is very broad and very open, so just say whatever comes to mind.
Well, you, I think, need to show their strengths and weaknesses. You need to, they need to be likable. They need to have some goals. They need, a foil would be nice, but it's not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in addition to the large epic moments, the small moments sort of help those pay off.
Mm-hmm.
Those things come to mind. Am I touching on what you had in mind?
It's sort of, but to boil it down a bit more, when I've talked about stories previously, there are two levels on which they tend to operate, which is micro and macro. So your micros, to not, again, belabor the point too much, is like individual character moments, like very small scale stuff. Macro is like wider level. So in Vinland Saga, your micro stuff is like, you know, character interactions with, like, say, Askeladd and Thorfinn, whereas the macro is like the whole war that's going on. Mm-hmm. That's the wider context. But this also works, I think, for character development, because there are two ways, in my opinion, that if you boil it down to its basics, before we even talk about strengths and weaknesses, that you can develop a character. The first of which is to keep it internal or very micro, which in we've seen before on this show with, for example, Thorfinn's dreams of Vinland. Mm-hmm. You know, the conflicts he feels like, you know, over his father's advice versus what he wants to do, which is, you know, murder the fuck out of Askeladd. But there's another way of doing it. And I think this is maybe, when I said before about how you see things in a new light, mm-hmm. I think this has made me realize what I've probably not been paying as much attention to as I should have been, which is by comparing and contrasting characters with each other and seeing where they have commonalities but also differences. And there are three characters who get focus in this episode, one of which to the lesser extent than the others, which is also, again, still a bit of a problem given they're the main character, by which I, of course, refer to Thorfinn, mm-hmm. and the other two are obviously Askeladd and Canute. But all three of them share certain commonalities. I mean, the visual one between Askeladd and Thorfinn is immediate when we see that at the start. But think about their origins. Like Askeladd is the product of a campaign of war, pillage, more than likely rape. Like, you know, he was not conceived in peacetime. And he certainly, I would say, been molded by it since then. Because look at his behavior. Everything Askeladd has done throughout the show's run, never mind what he's done off screen, is arguably what his dad did. Just, you know, not to Wales, because he wouldn't do it to Wales, but everywhere else is fair pickings for him. And also probably not even for a government that, like, you know, Askeladd's been doing it for his own means, like, you know. So, there's that. But then think, of course, what's happened to Thorfinn. Thorfinn, like, was only, what, 8, 10? Mm-hmm. If you had to go with that, when he was that. I would argue, like, that you can certainly say that there's, you know, characteristics that he's developed at that point, but he's still growing up, mm-hmm. you know? So I would say that even though, obviously, he already had been conceived, Thorfinn, as we know him now, was conceived in the same circumstances as Askeladd in terms of becoming that kind of person, defined by a life, well, pretty much a lifelong, you know, involvement in warfare and bloodshed. Mm-hmm. And so for all that, like, you know, Askeladd, which I'm going to now lead into, he seems to really actually have an undercurrent of hate for Olaf. He'll, like, you know,
yeah.
use Olaf's, like, heritage, like, his Danish heritage, as a mechanism to give him influence over Canute and get him into that position. But he holds no love for the country mm-hmm. or the people. It's Wales he's after.
Yeah.
So, how interesting and hypocritical of him
yeah.
to think, you know, yeah. I hate what the Danish did to, you know, Wales. I hate what he did to my mother. After all, he carried her back to Wales when he was 14 or whatever, and she was dying. I think it's pretty clear where his, like, who his favourite parent was, if I may be so honest. Yeah. Like, you know, and what he ultimately felt of all of this. Mm-hmm. But he's just perpetuating it. And we go back again to, of course, what we said before about cycles in this show.
Yeah.
It's building back up on it again.
Yeah, we're missing some information, right? Because, yeah, I mean, did he... It's interesting, like, has this been his plan all along? Like, to somehow kind of give back to Wales or use the Danes to put Wales in a better position and safeguard them? Or did he kind of give up on all that and, like, sink into this debaucherous life of a mercenary, and then suddenly he's presented with a chance and he takes it? Or has he been working toward this and just kind of, as a lot of times is the case when a person has a dream, sort of the steps to get there and people you step mm-hmm. on doing it, it's like people are blind to it, you know what I mean? They just don't even think about that they're causing those same circumstances.
I mean, think about Thorfinn himself in one of the earlier episodes where he, of course, was taken in by that Christian woman.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Younger Thorfinn, if he were there watching that happen, would have been horrified at it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the descent into doing that kind of murderous, like, you know, heinous shit, it's a slow one. But it's so slow, you probably don't notice it.
Yep. That's a good point.
And it's especially true if you're also fueled by certain feelings. Like, we don't, of course, know much about Askeladd's childhood, but he, like, literally carried his mother back to shore, so he must have been elsewhere. He can't have been in Wales at that time. Probably in Denmark with his father, probably being dragged around from battlefield to battlefield in not too dissimilar way as Thorfinn again.
Which I think lends credence to the case that either the whole time or almost the whole time, Askeladd has given a shit about Thorfinn. He's putting up a front that he doesn't care. And he wants, you know what I mean? Like, he obviously sees a lot of himself in this kid.
Hmm. Do you reckon the series will go full in on that then? Because I wonder. I mean, let's not forget here. Askeladd, at the very least, killed his father for gold.
Mm-hmm.
Dick move. real dick move, if I may say so myself.
Oh, foul. Come on.
Yeah. But on top of that, see all the other things that he's done and all the implications thereof. I mean, the anime, as we know from sources like Blinkaji, shout out to Blinkaji, you know, and others, have commented to us that certain of the more grisly elements that Askeladd's group get up to, like raping a woman in the stables where Thorfinn was sleeping, that's omitted from the anime. But even then, we can interpret, or at least, you know, get the idea that that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
We can infer it, certainly. So he is culpable for so much misery, so much suffering, death, destruction, all that stuff. So I'm just very curious how the show's going to try and work this, because can we in the end actually sympathize with him? That's going to be a real big ask,
mm-hmm,
of the lad. Sorry. Had to do that. That's going to be a real big
the
ask.
Absolute lad. No.
Do you reckon in fandom that, like, you know, his younger version is Ask a Kid?
You cut out there for a second. What I missed.
Do you reckon in fandom for Vinland Saga, Askeladd's younger self is referred to as Ask a Kid?
I hope so.
So we'll see. I'm very curious to see, like, how they're going to handle that. Because for me, like, when it comes to villains, like, in fiction, you don't need to, or often don't want to make them, you know, sympathetic, because then they become the protagonists. Like, well, when I say sympathetic, I mean, like, as in, like, we should approve of their actions. Because obviously then they wouldn't be villains anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But rather, what I would always ask of a good show or a good story is that it makes its villains understandable, that we can see why they got from being, in a previous point in their lives, to doing the awful things that they do now. Because in fiction, like, you know, saying your characters are good or evil doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
All characters in their own minds are in the right. So there you go. And certainly a lot of, like, you know, Askeladd's attitudes, like, seem to be, you know, again, that kind of cyclic thing which have come down from his father and his own bitterness towards the Danes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, caught between, like, you know, a country he couldn't go back to and one that actively produced the situation he's in. Is it any wonder he just went around, like, you know, pillaging and plundering? Again, not to excuse his actions, certainly, but only to understand them. And that's why I'm glad we're getting this now, because we're getting more layers to him, which makes him much more interesting to talk about, as opposed to simply, well, being pirate, you know?
Yeah,
he's got more to him.
Oh boy, yeah, it's all. I think I see myself feeling for the guy. I mean, like, if next episode, and it's probably not going to happen next episode, but if next episode we have the duel, and Thorfinn kills him, and, you know, he says something, whatever, it's probably going to be some asshole-ish thing to Thorfinn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will feel something because I've spent time with this character and I feel like I know this character to a degree, and, like, he's a bad person but still a person, and a lot of shit has happened to him that, you know, I don't know. I think it's hard to although, you know, Thorfinn wants to kill him, it's hard to say, like, he's the antagonist in the show. I don't know if, well, I would call him that.
I don't think there really is an antagonist, so to speak.
It's just war. War is the antagonist.
War is shit, yeah. War sucks. So, yeah, I am with you on that. In fact, like, I, of course, don't know how the rest of the show's going to go, but if they had that duel, let's just speculate here. Let's just put on our speculating hats. If only to cover up the shiny forehead I've got. Let's say they have that duel, mm-hmm. and let's say Thorfinn disarms him, and like, let's say, just throw out there, he wounds Asgard to the point where Asgard has fallen to the ground, and he is at Thorfinn's mercy. Would you agree with me if I said to you, I reckon Thorfinn would make for the killing blow, but then wouldn't do it? He would find some kind of thing like that would hold him back.
Yeah.
And it could be a mixture of things. It could be his father's own words,
mm-hmm.
or it could be like, you know, the realization of like, you know, he's too close to Asgard now to be able to truly do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think you hit it right on the head. I think it will be a mix of those things and a sense of, once I do this,
wherever down the dark path will you...
God damn it.
It will dominate your destiny.
It will dominate your destiny. No.
Forever down the dark path.
It would be like more of a, like, where do I belong? Like, what's the purpose of my life anymore? Those are different ones. They're like my life's goal will be accomplished. What then? I don't know if you think about that in the moment or whatever, but like, you might think of like, where am I going to sleep tonight? You know, if I kill Asglad, there's no way I can stay in this band of mercenaries. Like, where do I go?
I think they would let him stay, actually, because it would be an honorable duel. It wouldn't be like he murdered him in cold blood. You know, there's rules and etiquette around that. I think they'd all be...
I'm less sure only because they are a band of mercs, not a sort of band of knights, and they care about the money, and Askeladd brought in the money and knew how to get that connect for the gold. And I don't know if they would trust Bjorn. Who knows? I don't know if they might not do it right away, but I'm not sure it would be ultimately well received. But it'd be interesting to see. I don't know.
Mm. Indeed. There's a lot of complicated interpersonal politics and relationships here. If I may just quickly interject as well, we have had a question from one of our patrons, Blinkarji, about Bjorn's comments on Askeladd and also how that goes along with Askeladd's backstory and reframing their relationship. So I think this is probably a good time as any for us to actually discuss that.
Okay.
And I think that for Bjorn, like, Bjorn to me, I'd say he's simple. And I'm not saying mentally. I'm talking as in, like, he's just uncomplicated. He sees things very, you know, black and white, no fat, no nonsense, no fuss. And my understanding of him, as we've seen in the show, is this, right? He trusts Askeladd implicitly, but he knows very little about him in his history, even though, as Bjorn says, they've been together for decades. But they've been together for decades. The results speak for themselves. They are still alive in this age of bloody warfare, and they profited well from it. Stuff that, of course, I don't agree with, but nonetheless, from Bjorn's perspective, like, you know, he's had all the mushrooms he could ever eat. That's great. So I think that in Bjorn's case, like, you know, even if he were to learn of Askeladd's history and his ancestry, I don't think that would change his perception of him one bit. I think it would merely serve as a, you know, oh, that's neat and whatever, but you're the person I've always known you to be based on what you've done and your performance. But I think also it speaks to Askeladd's own, you know, perhaps reluctance to even display his heritage openly one way or another. Because bear in mind, they're mercenaries. Like, all those pirates could come from different stretches of all different coastlines and countries. Like, if you told me, for example, there were some Franks in Askeladd's group, I'd believe that. Or even some English.
Mm-hmm. Well, this leads me to pose this question. So, before this episode, we only considered Askeladd to be focused on mostly gold, mostly material possessions.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out he's actually quite a patriot. He has a lot of love for his homeland. Perhaps there are a lot of folks like that in his mercenary band, if he were to reveal that he's not Danish, or he doesn't care for the Danes. Maybe that would sort of create some mistrust. They'd be like, what?
Yeah.
You know, we love Denmark. It's the greatest. How dare you?
Or, if I may pose another perspective, possibly he's ashamed of it. Because he is technically a bastard child, like, of, you know, that was, well, from all the hints we've got, conceived, you know, through warfare, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's something he's not ultimately proud of.
Yeah. It mattered a lot back then. Right.
I mean, his attitude towards the Danish in general as presented this episode versus his attitude towards the Welsh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he clearly, you know, finds his history to be a source of anger for him. Like, you know, a source of, like, a force that pushes him to do what he does, where he essentially just, well, acts out and becomes a pirate.
Yeah.
And now, given the opportunity to do something patriotic for his country, he's going to actually use it. And that was, and in response to what you're saying there, like, you know, that's probably why he hasn't done anything up to this point, because what can one do until they have the means to do so?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I wonder if he likes his mercenary band. You know,
he seems okay. He was willing to get them beer and such previously, you know, give them full room and board.
But he's hiding that hatred of Denmark and the Danes, like, really deep down. So, like, in a deep down place, does he hate, like, Bjorn for being a part of that? Like, does he consider him tainted with that? And is that why he hasn't trusted him with his secrets? Because he can't trust Danes because he hates them?
To be fair, Bjorn and the others have been willing to fight against the Danish. So that's possible. But it also, you know, but it's also possible, as you say, like, you know, that he could, you know, perhaps not care for them after all. Like Bjorn says, though, we the audience, like, for all that we've been revealed, we still know very little about him, which is kind of fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of layers to this, this, you know, giant prick here.
The Welsh, you know, are like onions.
Smelly.
Layers.
Good in pots.
They have layers, donkey. Layers.
Oh my god. Okay, so I've rambled for a bit, and I hope that's a good answer or a reasonable answer for your question, Edmund. By the way, folks, if you do want to get in questions on Vinland or Sherlock, which we'll be covering soon, as we cover them, why not consider becoming a patron for as little as $2 per month?
Do we know the title of the show yet?
I'm just gonna go with Sherlock and hope that people aren't, you know, don't mistake me for referring to the Benedict Cumberbatch show.
No.
Which, by the way, I want to say right ahead of time, I really want a scene in this Sherlock anime where he's just doing the like that, like the magic, like, you know, Sherlock hand shit, the one which was just the dumbest shit ever.
That was bad. Yeah, no, we're
it was really bad.
We're referring to Kabuchiko, I think. Kabuchiko no Sherlock,
yes.
Or like case file number 222 Sherlock.
Yep. So in other words, we've got to cover 251 seasons before we get to that.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
Yep, we got to get on that this week.
Bloody hell. Oh dear. All right. So anyway, yeah, I've talked to death on that. But Doc, do you have any other talking points you want to add in? Do you want to throw anything into the pile?
Sure. You know, you talked about, like, comparing the characters to each other, and I mean, this episode was that for me, where I really kind of thought about that, and the show really brought those comparisons to the fore and kind of asks you to do that, which I like, which is good. And I thought, you know, we're talking about the kind of the genesis of Askeladd and Thorfinn and how they were kind of conceived, so to speak, in the fires of war. They're like their adulthood, their non-childhood parts of their lives, and kind of what they had to do to survive was some pretty brutal shit, right? The things that they had to sacrifice, like their innocence, their you know, their feelings, their, you know, Thorfinn's still holding on to his inner child to a degree, but like it's kind of just hanging on by a thread. He's had to really stuff it down and had to kill it. And they've really dehumanized themselves quite a bit, these two. But it's funny that, you know, when Canute is criticized, Ragnar says, like, hey, who are you guys to question this guy?
Yes.
Think this about line, everything that he sacrificed.
This line is very, very telling.
You know, he's had to, like, stuff down his own heart because all these people were killed in front of him, and he had to keep quiet, and he had to blend in, and he had to, you know, not stick out in any way to live. And this is a really interesting juxtaposition because a show like this with kind of a powerful narrative arm could sort of go in two different ways. It could lean into the obvious disparity, you know, with Thorfinn saying like, ah, you know, fuck you, dude. Like you're an embarrassment. You're a coward. You know, you sacrifice. I've sacrificed. You know, let's talk about what happened to me. And of course, Askeladd, you've shown what happened to him. And Canute begins to see like, oh, wow, like you're so right. Like what I went through was bad, but it was nothing compared to what you guys went through. Or they could give us more information that begins to make what Canute went through more of a like kind of an on even footing with what the others went through. They could really show like, you know, he had to endure some twisted shit, and you know, which is all to say that like I think that the show is doing a really good job of showing that like war and tragedy in general can have like different effects on different kinds of people. And it can churn out people that are broken in like these different kinds of ways.
Yeah. We've got our trio of broken people.
Yeah. Not right there. Not everybody, you know, Thorfinn is probably the kind of broken that you'd think of like a child soldier, you know, and everything like that. But, we still don't even know how deeply Canute has been affected. If Ragnar is telling the truth, you know, it could just be bullshit and he could just be totally this pampered, sheltered character, but or not, right? He could.
I actually would prefer that. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because this goes back to Ragnar's lie. He said, what place do you have to dictate, you know, what's best for him, for Canute? And then my response to that is, well, take a look in the fucking mirror, Coned. What gives you the right to dictate that? Because here's the thing, right? Like, Canute obviously has a lot of responsibility, like I said, as a member of royalty. And don't get me wrong, like, on the face value of it, like, you know, at least he hasn't actually been physically harmed or, like, you know, he's certainly traumatized, I would say. Mm-hmm. But I think the show is making an assertion here, and this ties back to what I said about Fawz's own, like, you know, very white morality of I won't kill, which is that sometimes there is an element of pragmatism needed. I'm not saying that Canute needs to be, you know, full-on Thorfinn murder kid, you know, for vengeance and all that. But there is a point somewhere between there where, appropriately, the two of them, contrasted though they are, as like, you know, well, Prince Pauper, etc., you know, Assassin's Creed versus, like, you know, Civilization 4, or whatever you want to call it, like, very meek. There's a point between there where I think both characters would find a lot of peace and they'd be able to truly do what they need to do that's best for them. Because Canute at the moment, like, you know, he can barely stand up for himself.
Yeah.
And obviously there are people relying on him, like, you know, to, like, in theory, like, if he cocks this up here right now, every one of them will die. So he needs to basically grow some balls. Like, and I'm not being dismissive of him here by saying that, as crass as that sounds, because obviously, like, you know, just from the short scene we had, which was very effective, like, he's basically been raised by Ragnar as a father. Mm-hmm. Again, tie that into how Thorfinn has basically been raised by Askeladd after the fact.
Yeah.
It's all parallels, I tells you. It all lines up.
Mm-hmm. So, will you join our cause of shipping Thorfinn and Canute, Shaddan?
I don't do shipping, generally speaking, so I will politely decline.
Ship Thorfinn and Canute.
That's true, Sophie. In Civilization series, Gandhi will fuck your shit up. he, for him, a hunger strike is something he drops from a fucking bomber, and it will blow you the fuck up. So don't screw Gandhi in Civilization.
Will he make war on you in the game, or will he just...
You can totally play Gandhi as a bloodthirsty, like, you know, dictator if you want to. It's totally possible.
Oh, my lord.
Anyway. To come back to Canute for a second, though, let's talk about the conversation he has with Thorfinn, and where Thorfinn, like, gives him sass, talks down to him, treats him like dirt. He cares not one jot for his royalty, his bloodline, what he looks like, apart from, as you know, to make jokes of him, like calling him a princess. And Canute reacts, like, you know, very indignantly, like, no, and he says, no one's ever talked this way to me before.
Baka.
So Ragnar has obviously, like, you know, clearly coddled him much of his life. Too much, in my opinion. I mean, yeah, shitty situation. Understandably, you want to shelter a kid from that kind of violence. But it's left him basically incapable of doing anything. However, this is the scene, in my opinion, where we start to see Canute change for the better, quote unquote. And I'll say why in just a moment.
Yeah.
The first thing I want to really note, by the way, is the line where he says, I'm a coward. Now, there's something very funny about an admission of that nature to me, because in my opinion, I don't think you can truly be a coward if you then admit you are one. Because obviously, you know, you mustn't be afraid enough to at least point that out. Like, admitting you're a coward, like, you know, takes the edge off that a little bit. Mm. Doesn't mean, of course, you're not afraid of, like, you know, other things. But it's certainly, you know, best than never saying you're never admitting you're having the courage to look at yourself and say that. So that's a starting point. You seem skeptical.
A little. Only because, well, I don't know. I mean, you could be right. I'm just thinking of Samwell Tarly. Do you recall Samwell Tarly from Song of Ice and Fire? Not Samwise Gamgee from Lord of the Rings.
I really did think that for a moment. I was like,
similar. Like, that was a not dissimilar sort of characters, actually. But no, Samwell Tarly is he's a sort of a prince who's been. Not a prince, but he's highborn, but he's been disowned and sent to the wall because his dad was annoyed with him, like, being a coward and interested in music and books and not sword fighting. So he sent him to the wall, and basically he'll tell anyone, like, I'm craven, you know, I am. And, he just, like, owns it. And then he just is. Any chance he gets to be a coward, he is full coward. but you know, I'm sure this is all in service of later on in the story, sort of having him do something quite brave.
Yeah. So I think that that's certainly a starting point for him, because finally he's being challenged. Like, you know, for a life of where the two experiences he's had, he's seen are of, you know, violence in the court and, you know, being too sheltered.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like was said in a Frank Herbert's Dune novel of Paul Atreides. Mm-hmm. You know, shelter the lad too hard and he'll grow up to be nothing. Paraphrase. Same thing here. So, but that's, again, a part of also the cyclic nature of it, because this has been thrust on him without his consent, in much the same way how Askeladd was conceived, you know, without consent in practically every sense of the word, and also how Thorfinn certainly didn't, you know, he didn't want his dad to die, if he could help it, nor did he want to be put in this awful situation he's in now. So again, we see cycles here, and they affect everyone, be they royal or not. But there's something else to note here. Recall the OP. There's a scene of Canute in there, and he's sat down in the front panel, and he looks super fucking stern in it. I am beginning to wonder, now that he's been challenged by Thorfinn, which, don't get me wrong, like, you know, mollycoddling him isn't going to help him.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if everything that's going to happen between them two is going to push Canute too far. And he's going to overshoot that midpoint and become cruel and capricious. Like, you know, like he's going to see in Thorfinn, like, what he needs to be. Even though, as we've established, Thorfinn's current, like, position in life and who he is not where he should be in the slightest. Yeah. Nor Askeladd, for that matter. He's, you know, he's got some bad examples flying around here now who are willing to challenge him as a person. And he's probably going to respond to that by, like, well, reacting as he does, but also, like, you know, taking them the wrong way. Too far, perhaps. I have the feeling that this is going to perpetuate that cycle again. But where we've gone from one end of this curve to the other.
Do you think he'll hit a sort of golden midpoint before he goes too far? Do you think there will be some period of, like, it worked? We did it.
If that happens, it'll be predicated on something that will then be proven false. Like, you know, oh, I believe in Canute or something like that. Somebody overhears Ragnar say, or rather, no, here's an idea. what if, you know, like, he meets that point, but then he overhears Ragnar talking with Askeladd. They don't know it. And Ragnar's like, I've always known him to be a twerp. I've always known he's got no spine.
Oh, no, no, the misunderstanding. Yeah. Why are you writing
this?
It
breaks him.
No.
And it breaks him as a result.
I hate this. I hate this.
I can totally see, I can see that happening.
Oh, I hate this. Just, oh, misunderstandings are the worst.
Do you hate it because I could
be
right?
Yeah, of course. Of course that's why I hate it.
I'll peer into my crystal ball of anime and just
this is,
ruin everything
this,
for
you know, fucking Mason, you know, Vinland Ikoku here. Like, but it's funny, isn't it, how you know, unintentionally, I think once again Thorfinn is sort of like helping Askeladd achieve his goal. Because he wants him to be pushed from the nest, and Thorfinn doesn't know, but Thorfinn's doing it. He's helping him.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
Yeah.
I have the feeling that things are going to go downhill a bit here in the future for Port Canute. It will probably earn him the respect of his peers, perhaps, but it won't be for his benefit as a person or a character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, like, there were apples also in, you know, the in the OP. And, you know, buying from an apple, knowledge and all that. But there's also the other old phrase, the apple falls not far from the tree.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And how? And if you think of how that applies to our characters, Askeladd basically became, you know, the sequel album to his father.
Mm-hmm.
Except worse, arguably, because at least he's not got the justification of doing it for a country. Which, paper-thin excuse though it is at least one.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Canute, whose father is the most bone-idle piece of shit I have seen in anime in quite a while. I literally cannot believe that he has ever stood up in his entire life.
Dude, once
eat
he's...
Too many, eat, if they... eat too many hog roasts there, King Sirin.
If they...
You know, one too many buckets of chicken wings, you fucking lump of lard.
Sweet lord. if they make him stand up, it's going to be like the greatest moment in the history of animation.
It's going to take the entirety of that one episode, and that's all we're going to see of it.
Have you ever seen Space Patrol Luluco?
I have not.
Oh my god. Then I almost don't want to spoil this moment for you. Are you aware of what Inferno Cop is?
How could I not be? I recently saw the amazing clip of, like, I'm immune to your bullets. So am I. No!
So,
and honestly, that feels like it was written by an 8-year-old, and I say that in the best way possible. It's like when you see those Twitter accounts of kids write jokes.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
It's really... It's
fucking brilliant.
So, Inferno Cop's cousin, Over Justice, is in Space Patrol.
Over Justice. Yes.
He's called Over Justice.
Over Justice.
And, well,
what a fucking name.
What we've been talking about applies. So yeah, you just need to see Luluco. Well, because, yeah, maybe Gurren Lagann first and then Luluco. But yeah, Over Justice is so good. Anyway. I don't really have too many other points that we've touched on a lot of the stuff I wrote down.
Yeah.
The only other thing I have written down is speaking of King Swain, this could be nothing, but I want to think that it's something. When he asked Floki about Canute and had that discussion, he had it with the crown off, and then when he was done, he put it back on.
Just casually spinning in his hand.
So it seems like it was the sort of... This is very basic kind of visual metaphor or whatever, but like... It felt like he was talking as a father without the crown on, as you know, and like I'm worried about Canute. And then it's like when I wear the crown, I have to be like, I can't like show special concern or have like these kind of feel. I have to like rule.
I see where you're coming from.
I'd like to think that's
happening. I'm not saying your interpretation is invalid, but I'm going to take the more cynical approach, as is often my want on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I think that him spinning the crown around his hand or holding it like that is him taking the role of king too lightly. Like, he, in theory, should be, you know, leading his country for the better. All he's doing is just having a dick-measuring contest with England for basically no reason. And I think that that lax attitude to wearing the crown as he is there, I think that's representative of that.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bad king. And he's also in dire need of going to the fucking gym. Get a treadmill, man! Get an exercise bike!
Yeah.
I mean, I heard that Robert Baratheon in Game of Thrones was a bit on the poorly side.
You're right.
Get me the breastplate stretcher.
It's true. It's true.
And that's who I'm reminded of here.
It's the fat king.
An ineffectual, useless waste of oxygen. But who people afford great respect to because of that, you know, right of power that he's got, of this shiny object he wears on his head. Even though all he's really contributed thus far is, well, looking very bored, doing the classic Vinland Saga pose, mm-hmm. and, well, sending his son off to war for no good reason.
Because he wants land. Yeah, Odin said so. He's been touched by Odin. Blessed.
Oof, I'm sorry. That's going to be a weird court case. Oh, God. Anyway, yeah, I don't really have much else to add either. Shall we recap some polls then before we close out?
Let me hit the refresh button really quick here.
Smash that button!
So we can see the updated numbers. Vote. If you want to vote at Watery Death Show, they'll be up for a week. You know, you can vote now if you go to the Twitch chat and click the links. Or you could just go onto our Twitter and vote. Again, they'll be up for a whole week, so you can participate here. So, poll number one. Is Shaddan cursed as a poll maker? 78% say yes, totally. 22 say no, he's just unlucky. Poll number two. Since we got a new OP, are visuals or music more important to you in an OP? 70% say music. Still early days, but that is a good start. That is, you're all more and more correct. Poll number three. Who is the butt of the joke?
I'm so sorry for that. I really am. I just couldn't resist. I'm like, you know, I'm like a moth to the flame. I should know better, but I just couldn't help myself.
No, and nor should you, because this is prime poll material. Who is the butt of the joke? 57% say Asser. And only 43 say Gradianus. That could be a closely contested race.
As long as we're not shipping them to, I'm okay.
Poll number four.
If you put up a poll number six, I'm going to get you. Just saying. Don't do it. Don't do it, Doc.
Do you join us in shipping Thorfinn and Canute? 63% say yes. Very good. And poll number five, my favorite of the polls. Thornute or Canfin? And 13% say Thornute, 13% say Canfin, and 75% say I hate this. Those are the polls.
Incredible. I mean, you say I'm cursed as a poll maker. I
these are great polls. I love these polls.
Oh my god. If you've ever put the words Rule 34 in there, there's gonna be blood. I'm just saying that now. But anyway, let's round out our thoughts on the episode with some ratings. I'm going to pass over to you firstly, Doc. What's your rating of the episode and your final thoughts?
I'm kind of torn between giving it two different scores. Because I really liked the episode. I thought it was better than the show's been in a couple weeks. Definitely more meat to chew on here. Mm-hmm. For sure. And it was really good meat. I mean, the Askeladd stuff was tremendous. The Canute stuff was just great. I love his, like, the direction that they're taking his character.
Yeah. I agree.
I love the, like, if we could just have him arguing with Thorfinn a lot, like, I will eat that up. That'll be tremendous. And The show has been in dire need of something shippable since Ilya has left our presence. And, you know, hello, Canute. Welcome to the party.
Oh, my God.
So I think given all those positives, I'm going to, as I am want to do on this podcast, I'm going to go for the higher of the two scores that I was kind of deciding between. And I'm going to rate this. I am going to rate this 4.25 Prince Valiant haircuts out of 5.
No, it's the Bruno Bucharest.
You're right. The Bruno. Right, yes. 4.25 out of 5.
Okay. For me, then, I think that for me, the thing I appreciate most about this episode feels like Vinland Saga is getting some real strong sense of focus again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say that there haven't been, like, a lot of, like, meaningful moments in the past couple of episodes, but it felt like we were killing time, really, to get to the later plot. And that's why I posed that question to you last time. Could we just skip this? Could we have skipped all the lead up to this? And a substantial chunk of it, I still think you could have done so. But now we're starting to get, like, the seeds being planted of new character arcs and revelation, particularly Canute, who, as I say, now feels like he's actually become a character rather than just, well, the MacGuffin. I mean, up until this point, you could replace Canute with, like, say, a Royal Scepter or the Ark of the Covenant or some shit, and it would have basically had the same effect for me. But that's now changed, and we've got seeds of things being planted for the future, which I really, really like. Plus, again, more reinforcement of the theme of the show, but in new and interesting ways. Rather than it just being beaten over the head with people talking about it over and over that we don't care about, it's actually about the characters that we want to learn more about. So that's where that focus comes in that I said before.
Yeah.
I am still of the opinion the show needs to pick up its pace a bit more, but I am certainly more on board than I was in the previous week. For that reason, plus all the good stuff that we've talked about here, I'm debating one of two. I've got two scores in my head as well on this one, if I'm quite honest. Do I be cynical or not? Do I have my glass half empty or half full for once? I don't know.
I'm saying nothing. Don't want to influence this decision.
You are not helping in the slightest. You know what? No, I'm going to be a half full kind of guy on this. I'm going to give the episode 4 out of 5 leaning on your face, couldn't give a shit expressions out of 5. because, again, there's a lot of good stuff here to be unpacked, and there's certainly a lot of promise for future arcs. And we're finally getting back to the micro stuff that's really interesting as opposed to, well, you know, macro war is hell stuff, which in some way makes sense. You know, you start high, you drill down low. But the show did really start off in a micro level with Fours and Forfin,
yeah.
Which is why I'm glad we're now getting back to the where it's truly shone before.
Yeah, that all. So yeah, I'm in agreement.
So otherwise, by the way, I forgot to mention. Do you know what I said before about Child of a Hero being an ambiguous title? Could it be Askeladd or Forfin it's referring to? Because technically, Olaf was a hero. If you want to argue the toss.
Oh wait, so the episode, what is it called? Is
Child of a Hero?
Child of a Hero. I'm going to say that it is that they're referring to Askeladd, and Artorias is, you know, the hero in question.
It technically could apply to all three if you want to push it that far. I'm sure that, you know, before Samhain had one too many KFC bargain buckets that, you know, he actually probably could fight.
Let's see, just like Robert Baratheon. you know.
He probably had a moment where he was in his prime as opposed to tucking into prime rib. So there's that.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, before he had the before he had a Popeyes built in the castle.
He's just got the giant tubs of shrimp being brought every day. I really should be mocking him for this as someone who is himself overweight, so I'll just cut that there. But anyway, thank you all again, everyone, for joining us. I'm really, really happy, as always, to continue covering Vinland Saga. I'm glad things are picking up again. Like, I might have been down on the show previously, but I was only down on it more because I'd seen how good it had been and I wanted it to keep that going or even build on that quality. And we're going back up now. We're getting back up to the good stuff, and I'm sure there's plenty of great things to come. We'll, of course, be continuing to cover this all the way up until, I think it's probably going to be Christmas, isn't it, by the time this concludes?
Yeah.
Much like it, Banana Fish.
Yeah.
So, oh boy, that's going to be a fun final episode, I'm sure. Much like the last one.
Yeah.
Like, how many Christmases are you and I going to be covering anime on that, like, you know, the final episode is such a downer? Am I going to wear my stupid Christmas hat again and it's just going to be like, you know, the most miserable Let's Talk ever?
Hopefully by then our YouTube live streaming will be unsuspended and we can do some kind of Christmassy thing that will be uplifting in spirit.
Oh, man. Well, I better start prepping my top anime of the year list and also like start dishing out some awards for some of the more heinous things I've had to put myself through.
I can't.
The way, Keisha, man, would you believe that I actually have two contenders for most disappointing anime of the year?
Well, I don't think Shield Hero you could count as disappointing.
No, I can actually count as disappointing. I'll tell you why without belaboring the point. Like, I hate all of its politics, messages, and general attitude towards everything, but it's just so lazily fucking written. Like, it's like I've said to you before, if Crunchyroll at least wanted to serve me a turd, the best they could have done was polish it first, wankers.
So, like, so what you're saying is, you thought it was going to be really, really bad already, but...
I thought it was going to be bad for its ideas, but what I didn't expect to be bad for was its execution.
Even that standard to which your expectations were set, you were disappointed that those low standards were not met.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Okay.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
I find it hard to, like, give sort of the label of disappointing to just things that you just know are just awful. They're going to be awful. But this is a totally subjective, you know, difference that doesn't matter in philosophies, so...
The other one, by the way, is One Punch Man Season 2.
Oh,
my fucking Christ, that was a mess.
Oh, boy.
And I'm not even... And before you even say anything, I'm not even talking about the animation. Like, I am completely disregarding that, in my opinion. I just thought the scripts and the plots and the episodes were just piss weak, if I'm quite honest.
That one is probably going to sweep that award.
That stung. It stung watching that show. Anyway, we'll not belabor the point here and keep you all any longer. That being said, though, if you'll indulge me for just 2 minutes of your time... do again feel free to consider becoming a patron of Wario Desho for as little as $2 a month. You can get involved in higher tiers, like, you know, you get access to early content, you'll be able to get onto our Sherlock discussion, you'll in turn be also able to request potentially for us to cover shows if you're on the highest tier of $5, and there's plenty of other good stuff to be in there as well, also including Discord access if you want to talk to me, Doc, or Vargelia firsthand. Got a bunch of cool patrons already in there. Again, a nice little community foster, which is fantastic. Yeah. I love talking to all of them. If you're not following us on Patreon or subscribing to us, you can still help us by liking or subscribing wherever you may find us, be it on iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube, you know, the local paper, whatever's good, you know. If you find it on your local jukebox, just keep it playing, you know. Run the club dry for a couple of hours of listening to me badger on about shit. But yeah, it really does help our discoverability and accessibility if we do get those likes and comments. So do feel free to do so wherever you can. It really, really is appreciated. But otherwise, I believe that takes us to the end of episode 13 of Vinland Saga. We will be returning next week to cover episode 14. If I'm not mistaken, is it this week that Sherlock begins, or is it the following?
It does begin at the end of this week. I don't know if we'll be able to record anything until next
week. The end. Yeah. For those of you wanting to catch our Sherlock discussion, then it will more than likely be next week it comes out, because I am elsewhere. I am indisposed for reasons. But anyway... That is my secret. Sorry. So anyway, on that ambiguous and mysterious note, I will bid you all a very good evening. Thank you all again very much for joining us. And as we're always very fond of saying here on the podcast, brace yourself, everyone, to the ends of the universe. A very good night.
Good night.